Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is A Day in the Life of a WebSphere MQ Transmission Queue. Today's presenter is Anghil Wafera. Anghil is a member of the WebSphere MQ support team for Unix and Windows platforms. He has experience with the JMS clients of WebSphere MQ and WebSphere Application Server. At this point in time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Anghil.
Hello, MQ fans. Thank you very much for attending this presentation. Next page, please. This presentation is really about the overall topic of distributed messaging, or sending messages from one queue manager to another. One of the main components for distributed messaging is the transmission queue, and in this presentation, special attention is given to this component. I will talk about the heartbeats in the channels to keep the channels from being abnormally terminated by firewalls. I will talk about the dead letter queue, DLQ, and I will give a short explanation for the system cluster transmit queue, which is used in a cluster of queue managers. Slide number 3. I hope that you will enjoy this presentation, which has an unusual delivery format. I'm having fun right now, and I invite you to join me. I will use a bit of Romeo and Juliet from William Shakespeare to illustrate some of the main points for this presentation. Spoiler alert! If you do not want to hear the tragic end of these lovers, please cover your ears during slide 56. I chose this play because my son Victor played the role of Benvolio, a friend of Romeo in high school, and the role of the prince while attending college. No, Victor did not play the role of Juliet, probably because of his beard. Anyway, when I was studying engineering in Mexico, I joined two art groups, one for theater and another for pantomime, which is the art of performing stories in science without words. My favorite mime routine is playing inside a crystal box. Let me demonstrate it for you. Wow, the performance was phenomenal. That crystal box looks so real. Oh, but I'm sorry, you were not able to see it. Well, as you experienced already, a mime will have a very hard time in being successful in radio and in webcast. Thus, I will not be a mime during the rest of this presentation. But I will exploit my voice skills, and I will represent different roles and characters. The overall theme of the presentation is that of a young kid who is going to sleep and is asking his grandpa for a story, similar to what happened in the movie The Princess Bride. I ask my son to write a movie trailer, and I am narrating it now to the style of Don LaFontaine. Dun, dun, dun. In a world where houses are divided, feuds are common, and love is forbidden, where Capulets and Montagues are set against each other since either could remember, Romeo and Juliet star as lovers whose love knows no bounds. One of the Shakespeare's greatest stories ever told has both mayhem and murder, and the sweet sugar of love is sprinkled throughout.
Grandpa Transmission Q, tell me a story.
I am going to tell you a story when I helped Romeo and Juliet.
But Grandpa, you were not around at the time of Romeo and Juliet.
Hey, I grew up when there was no internet and no cell phone. That makes me a dinosaur, and thus I could have easily lived at the time of Romeo and Juliet. Listen, do you see these paper dolls that I have in my hand that are in the picture there? Well, I'm playing with them. Romeo is on one hand, and he says,
"Oh, Juliet, I love you, dear."
And then Juliet is in the other hand.
"Oh, Romeo, I love you too."
Hey, Grandpa, they are kissing. Stop them. Stop them.
Hey, Romeo and Juliet, stop kissing in front of an audience. Hey, kids these days. Wait a second. Those kids lived a gazillion years ago. Well, some things do not change.
Next page, please. Slide 4, how to pronounce XMITQ.
Grandpa, how do you pronounce the word XMITQ?
Well, some of these NQs do not know how to pronounce. Is it Zydmitq, such as xylophone? Or XMITQ, such as in X-ray or X-Men? Or ChrisMITQ, such as in Christmas? Or CrossMITQ, such as in crossing? Well, the answer is TransMITQ or TransmissionQ. Next page, please. Slide 5. As you may know, Romeo and Juliet were in love, and they wanted to communicate as much as possible. They exchanged messages as follows. Romeo will write a message in a piece of parchment and place it in a box labeled QJ, Q for Juliet, in the lobby inside his house. Juliet will come to his house and get the message from the box labeled QJ. An example of such a message will be, Romeo, oh, Juliet, I love you. Juliet, oh, Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Hey, Grandpa, what did she say?
Well, that is all English. Let me translate it for you.
Yo, Romeo, where the heck are you?
Ah, because you guys know about NQ. Here's the corresponding picture of the process. The biggest rectangle represents the machine where the queue manager 1, is located. The machine is called Verona 1, which was named after the city in Italy where the events took place. The processing from left to right is as follows. There are two applications running in the same machine as the queue manager. The application Romeo, on the left, puts a message into the queue named QJ. The message is stored in the QJ. Then the application Juliet, on the right, gets the message. Both applications are using the transport type of bindings, which means that they use inter-process communication services, that is, shared memory. This means that there is no network involvement at this time. So far, so good. Next page, please. Slide 6. Well, Romeo liked to flirt, and he started correspondence with his ex-girlfriend, Rosalind. And he used the same method. He will put a message in another box labeled QR, Q for Rosalind, in his house. Rosalind will come to his house and get the message from the box. But his good friend and tech guru, Benvolio, alerted Romeo. Hey, dude, what are you doing by letting these chicks use a binding connection to get their messages, man? They could get mad at each other when they are visiting you and try your house. They can hack on your server by snooping on the inter-process communications. Dude, this is not a good idea. Next page, please. Slide 7. For your security, man, you need to stop allowing Juliet and Rosalind to come to the house directly. Instead, have another location where both Juliet and Rosalind can set their application, which will use a transport type called client connection. The application from Juliet will ask the MQ client to come to your house and pick up her messages on her behalf, and then the MQ client will deliver the messages to her. The picture in the slide shows the new arrangement. In MQ terms, Juliet and Rosalind will be located in another host, Verona 2, and they will not have the chance to come directly to Romeo's house and hack it. Notice that because there might be one message for Juliet and another for Rosalind at the same time, there must be two instances of the MQ client coming to the house, one for Juliet and another for Rosalind. Each MQ client will have its own connection called a client-server connection channel, and each will require a socket to be used in each of the hosts. The MQ client code can be trusted to come to get to the messages. However, is it possible that someone else might be impersonating Juliet or intercepting the messenger and alter the contents of the messages? To address these issues, it is recommended to use the Secure Sockets Layer Protocol, or SSL, but this is beyond the scope of this presentation.
To protect your privacy of your host, Romeo, you will need to pay for the services of two NQ clients and the usage of the corresponding sockets.
What? How the NQ client finds which Q manager to use?
Well, the NQ client connection can find out the name of the Q manager in four different ways. This is the order of precedence. Number one, the NQ con call, either hard-coded in the application or passed as input parameter. B, number two, the environment variable NQ server. Three, the NQ client configuration file, nqclient.ini. This is new in version 7. And four, the client channel definition table, or CCDT. Next page, please. Slide 8. But Romeo could not stop flirting. He joined the fashionable club of Portrait Book, and he had a dozen girlfriends, and he was corresponding with all of them. Here's what the picture looks like. It shows now that there are three queues, and each one is accessed by an NQ client which uses a pair of sockets. Notice that many sockets and channels are being used. I could show you 15 connections, but the picture will get very busy, and I hope that by showing three connections, you will get the idea of the scalability situation. Romeo had a limited budget, and the bean counters were asking him to either continue paying high fees for using too many sockets and channels, or to reduce the amount of sockets and channels that he was using and find another way to communicate. Next page, please. Slide 9. In addition, Juliet complained to Romeo that sometimes the NQ client could not deliver its message in a timely fashion due to weather and road conditions, and she wanted Romeo to send the messages in batches. Romeo asked Benvolio for advice. Next page, please. Slide 10. Benvolio suggested the following. Hey, dude. To mitigate the issue with the network delays, you can send the messages in batches to Juliet's host, and Juliet could then get the messages locally. To do this, we will need to create a queue manager 2 in Juliet's host, Verona 2, and create a corresponding local queue for her, as shown in the diagram. The messages that are placed in the box QJ and QManager 1 on the left side in host Verona 1 are automatically transferred to the box QJ in the QManager 2 at host Verona 2 on the right side. Then Juliet could get the messages from her local queue using bindings mode, and she will see a good response time even if there are network delays between her hosts. Next page, please. Slide 11. Romeo asked, could we do the same thing for the other girls? Benvolio draw the following diagram. This shows a hypothetical way to transfer messages using many channels and sockets from QManager 1 on the left to QManager 2 on the right. And you can see that there is there for QJ for Juliet, QR for Rosalina, and all of them are automatically transferred to the host on the right side. Romeo looked at the diagram and told him volume. I get the idea of increasing the throughput at Julia's site, but with this proposal, I still need to pay a lot for the sockets and the NQ clients, because this approach has not changed the number of sockets and channels, man. Next page, please. Slide 12. If everything else fails, read the instructions. Benvolio decided that it was time to consult the NQ manual, so specifically the one called intercommunication. He found a section that describes the concept of distributed messaging to transfer messages between queue managers. The picture shows the main components involved in sending messages from the queue manager on the left to the queue manager on the right. The queue manager on the left has a special queue called transmission queue. That's me, says the grandpa, which will contain the messages to be sent to the other queue manager. The transmission queue interacts with the message channel agent, MCA, which uses a channel to transfer the message to the corresponding MCA at the receiving side. Then, that MCA will deliver the message to the proper destination queue. Notice that the same channel can be used to send messages for different destination queues. That is, there is no need for dedicated channels for each queue. Then if you have 10 cues, you need only one channel. If you have 100 cues, you need only one channel. Each end of a channel has a separate definition, one for the sending end and another for the receiving end. A simple channel consists of a sender channel definition at the local queue manager and a receiver channel definition at the remote queue manager. These two definitions must have the same name and together constitute one channel. Notice the inclusion in the diagram of a dead letter queue, which is ODL queue, which is necessary for storing messages that could not be delivered to the destination queue. This DL queue will be explained in more detail later on. Next page, please. Slide 13. This page contains additional notes on this topic. I will not cover all the details, and you're welcome to review them later on from your own copy of the PDF file. Next page, please. Slide 14. The sequence of events in this picture is as follows. Number one, on the left. After doing an NQCon to connect to the queue manager, the put-in application issues NQOpen and NQPut calls to put messages to the target queue. Number two, during the NQOpen call, the name resolution function detects that the target queue is not local. That is, it is a remote queue and decides which transmission queue is appropriate. Thereafter, on the NQPut calls associated with NQOpen call, all messages are placed on the appropriate transmission queue. Number three, the sending MCA gets the messages using NQGet from the transmission queue and passes the messages to the receiving MCA at the remote queue manager. Number four, the receiving MCA puts the messages on the target queue. Number five, the getting application issues NQOpen and NQGet calls to get the messages from the target queue. Only step one and five involve application code, and steps two, three, and four are performed by the local queue managers and the MCA programs. The put-in application is unaware of the location of the target queue, which could be in the same computer or in another computer. The combination of sending MCA, the network connection, and the receiving MCA is called a message channel and is inherently a unidirectional device. Normally, it is necessary to move messages in both directions, and two channels are set up for this, one in each direction. Next page, please. Slide 15. This page contains additional notes on the topic. In larger networks, the use of queue managers has a number of advantages over other forms of communication. These advantages derive from the name resolution function, and the main benefits are applications do not need to make routing decisions, and they do not need to know the network structure. The network links are created by system administrators and is controlled by network planners. And multiple channels can be used between nodes to partition traffic. That is, for example, messages with higher priority can use one channel, other messages with lower priority can use other channels. Next page, please. Slide 16. We'll skip it. Next page, please. Slide 17. More notes. Let's skip it. Next page, please. Slide 18. Now it is time to define the label automagically that was mentioned in earlier slides. Here's the sequence of events. Step number one. Romeo puts a message in a remote queue definition called QJ. This queue is not a local queue, and it does not store any messages. Step number two. Instead, this remote queue definition passes the message to the transmission queue for the desired remote queue manager, in this case, queue manager 2. Step number three, the transmission queue adds a header to the original message, which indicates the name of the remote queue manager and the remote queue. This extended message is made available to the message channel agent, MCA, for transmission. Step number four, the MCA from the originating host will make an exact copy of the extended message from the transmission queue and contacts the MCA of the destination queue manager and starts the transmission. The original copy is kept for backup purposes, and it is deleted until the message is successfully received. Notice the pair of channel definitions. One sender, called QManager1.QManager2, and one receiver named QManager1.QManager2. Both have the same name. The convention is to have the two names of the queue managers involved, and starting with the first, that is the sender. The confusing part is with the receiver, because again, we have to do the sender first in the name. This is not required. This is just a best practice. Step number five, when the transmission completes, the NCA of the destination queue manager removes the extra header and tries to put the message to the destination queue. If the message is delivered to the destination queue, then the destination MCA communicates to the originating MCA that it is okay now to delete the backup copy of the message, and then it is deleted from the transmission queue. If there is no destination queue at the remote queue manager, then the destination MCA will put the message into the dead letter queue if it's available. If there is a problem with the transmission and the message cannot be delivered, for example, the DLQ is full, then the backup copy that resides with the transmission queue is not deleted, and it is kept alive for another retry. And step number six, once the message reaches its destination queue, then it is available for Juliet to get it at her convenience. Next page, please. Slide 19. The previous slide showed only one remote queue definition and one queue destination. This slide shows two remote queue definitions which use the same transmission queue MCAs and channel because the destination queues reside in the same remote queue manager. Notice that even though we have more remote queue definitions, we are still using the same components for transporting the messages between queue managers. This means that we do not have to pay for the extra cost of having additional channels and sockets for each additional remote queue definition. Hopefully, this picture will help to visualize the scalability. The picture will look very similar if using 15 remote queue definitions or 100. As long as if we have all those remote queue definitions talking to queues that reside in the remote queue manager, we just need only one channel. Next page, please. Slide 20. Hopefully, this analogy with envelopes could help you to understand the usage of an extender header. This analogy does not use the standard terminology for enqueue. One of the tasks related to the transmission queue is to add a transmission header to the original message. This transmission header has information for the NCA, such as the name of the remote queue manager and the remote queue. However, because this transmission header causes confusion to some customers when they inspect messages that are still at the transmission queue, the following analogy could be useful. The transmission header could be logically compared to a big envelope that has inside a small envelope. The small envelope represents the original message. Thus, the sending MCA will transfer the big envelope to the receiving MCA. That is, the MCAs do not directly handle the small envelope. They do it indirectly because the small envelope is inside the big envelope. Next page, please. Slide 21. The next slide shows the main processing that happens when a message is placed in a remote queue definition and handled by the transmission queue and MCA. Step number one. The application puts a text message into a local queue or a remote queue definition. The queue manager puts an additional header, which means to obtain a logical envelope to put the message. Every time a new envelope is obtained, it will have a new message ID. In this case, the small envelope has a unique message ID, such as hexadecimal 414, etc., etc., and the last digits are 4702. We'll refer shortly, just 4702, to the message ID of the original message in this example. By default, the queue manager will generate the message ID. Although it is possible for you to customize the message ID, it is strongly recommended that you let the queue manager assign the message ID. Why? Because a message ID is generated by a queue manager that is unique within the whole MQ infrastructure of your organization. However, this depends on all participating queue managers to have names that are unique within the first 12 characters. The correlation ID of the initial header is initially zero, and the text message is placed inside the logical envelope. It's called body in the picture. Thus, this picture of a small envelope shows the logical representation of the message descriptor, or MD, being the label of the envelope, and the actual message being the payload inside the envelope. Next page, please. Slide 22. If it is a local queue, then no further processing on the envelope is needed, and the envelope waits for an MQ client to pick up the envelope. Step 2 in that picture, in that slide, it is, if a remote queue definition, then the message is quickly moved to a transmission queue. The remote queue definition does not store messages. You cannot browse or get messages from a remote queue definition. The transmission queue is the one that will have the messages. And when it's receiving a message from the remote queue definition, the transmission queue obtains a new envelope which has a transmission header of format equals MQXMIT for MQ transmit header. This header has a new message ID and a correlation ID of 0. The idea, again, of a logical envelope is to represent the addition of a new header. In this case, the new envelope with the transmission header will be referred to as the big envelope. Next page, please. Slide 23. This picture shows the logical process of placing the small envelope inside the big envelope. The small envelope on the left is the original message with the message descriptor and payload. It has a format of MQSTR for MQ string and a message ID of 4702 and a correlation ID of 0. The big envelope on the right has a new message ID, which ends with 4703. The message ID of the bigger envelope, 4703, is different than the one from the smaller envelope, 4702. The message descriptor of the big envelope has a format of NQXMIT for NQ transmission, which is different than the format of the small envelope, NQSTR. Next page, please. Page 24. This slide shows the big envelope containing the small envelope. The message ID of the smaller envelope, 4702, is used as the correlation ID of the larger envelope. This could cause a little bit confusion to some people. Then the big envelope, the transmission header, has a message ID of 4703 and a correl ID of 4702. The small envelope, the original message, has a message ID of 4702 and a correlation ID of 0. Thus, if you just look at the correl ID of the big envelope, you will know that the message ID of the small envelope is 4702. Next page, please. Page 25. I wrote the following IBM Tech Talk, 7021177, which is how the message ID and correlation ID in an MQ message descriptor are handled in a transmission queue. After I wrote that Tech Talk, I decided to prepared this webcast because I thought it was an interesting idea to talk about distributed messaging and how things are handled in the message descriptors. In that particular document, I have the complete output of the sample MQSBCG, which browses all the messages from a queue. This sample does a non-destructive get, that is, after displaying all the messages, the messages are not deleted from the queue, and the messages are still available in the queue. This sample shows all the fields for each message, the message descriptor, and the payload. By the way, if you want to display the actual message and delete the messages from the queue, you can use the sample MQSGET, but it does not show the MD. The output in this slide shows the original or a small envelope. Okay? Notice that it has two sections. On the top is the message descriptor, and at the bottom is the actual payload of the message. In this case, it's text-1. From the perspective of this presentation, the main items from the message descriptors are highlighted in red. Format, MQSTR, the message ID, which is generated by the queue manager, correlation ID equals 0, and the payload. Next page, please. Slide 26. This is the output from sample MQSBCG that shows a complete message as it resides in the transmission queue. In order to display the message,
I had to stop the sender channel and thus not allowing the transfer of messages to take place. This slide shows a very high view, and thus the font is very small. More details will be shown in subsequent slides. This output shows the small envelope inside a bigger envelope, okay? The bigger envelope is shown at the top in green color. Notice that the value for the format is MQXMIT, and the first line in the payload for the bigger envelope in the first three bytes is the eye catcher called the transmission header. The rest of the payload for the big envelope is shown in very tiny font and kind of purplish, and it shows the original envelope, the smaller envelope. Okay? Next page, please. Page 27. Now, this slide shows with a normal font the top portion of the message in the transmission queue. This is the portion I'm referring to as the big envelope. Number one, notice that the value for the format is MQXMIT. Number two, notice that the values for the message ID and correlation ID. The correlation ID is 4702, which is the message ID of the original message. This is the view, really, that causes confusion to many customers because they see that message ID is 4703, but they know that the original message has a different message ID, 4702, and a correlation ID of 0, and they say, well, if my original message is 4702 and the correl ID is 0, why do I see a 4703 message ID with a correlation ID of 4702? Because they're confused. They think that this is the original envelope, and it's not. This is the bigger envelope. Okay? Now, the other thing I wanted just to highlight in this picture is the last ellipse at the bottom, which is that the first line, the first three bytes, has an eye catcher that is XQH that indicates that it is a transmission header. Next page, please. Slide 28. Now, this slide shows with a normal font, more or less, at least it's legible, the bottom portion of the message in the transmission queue. This is the portion I'm referring to as the small envelope. I'm highlighting the format, MQSDR, which is embedded over there, and the message ID of 4702, which are indicators that this is the original message, okay? Next page, please. Page 29. Well, here are the rest of the steps. Step number 5, the NCA sends the big envelope using the sender channel. Step 6, the NCA of the receiver channel obtains the big envelope and extracts the smaller envelope. Then it discards the big envelope. Number 7, the NCA places the message into the destination queue. And step 8, the application gets the message. Next page, please. Returning a message, slide 30. This picture shows at the top, from left to right, how a message is sent from Queue Manager 1 to Queue Manager 2, and we discussed all these steps earlier. The additional part of this picture shows is at the bottom, from right to left, how a message is returned from Queue Manager 2 back to Queue Manager 1. If your application requires messages to be returned from the remote Queue Manager, you need to define another transmission queue and channel to run in the opposite direction between the Queue Managers. Next page, please. Slide 31. The picture from the previous slide can be found in the web page listed in this slide, which is from the MQ version 7 Information Center, components needed to send a message. Next page, please. Slide 32. I wanted to give you all the run MQSC commands that you need to create two directional channels. I wrote the following tech note, commands to set up both ways communication between two queue managers via sender and receiver channels. The contents of the tech note is shown in the next slide. Next page, please. Slide 33, the commands from queue manager 1. In this example, the following queue managers are used. Queue manager 1, let's call it QM Angelito, digital angel in Windows. and QManager 2, QMVAR in Linux. Okay? From QManager 1, we have to define a local queue. In this case, it's Q5, just to say something. Next, we define a local queue that is used for transmission. Notice that the usage attribute must be XMITQ, the transmission queue. In the third command, we define a remote queue definition. Okay, notice that the queue remote is the name of the queue in the local queue manager. This is what we know in the local queue manager. Then the R name is the name of the remote queue. That's the name in the other queue manager. The RQM name is the name of the remote queue manager. The attribute XMITQ is the transmission queue to use. In this case, is the name of the other queue manager. Next, we define a receiving channel. Why? Well, I wanted to give all the commands for both directions, okay? Then notice that the best practice convention for channel names is to indicate the two queue managers that are involved. First include the sender and then the receiver. The channel type is RCVR, which indicates that it's a receiver. Okay, the channel name is qmver.qmangelito. Okay, qmver is the sender qmangelito. Again, this is a receiver channel. Next, we go to define a sender channel. Notice that the order of the queue manager is in the name of the sender channel is the reverse than the receiver channel defined earlier. The attribute channel type is SDR for sender. Also, notice that the sender needs to know the address of the remote queue manager via the con name attribute. The XMITQ attribute is the name of the transmission queue that we have to use. For those who are new to run MQSC, notice that the plus sign at the end of the first lines. This indicates that the command continues in the next line. This is how you can split a long command when using run MQSC. Notice that the last line should not end with plus. Finally, we start the sender channel. Notice that only the sender channel needs to be started. The sender-receiver channels have an internal communication protocol, and the receiver channel is started by the sender channel. There is no need to explicitly start a receiver channel, but if you start it via run MQSC or the MQ Explorer, there is no harm done. Okay? Next page, please. Slide 34. These are the commands for the queue manager 2. Notice that it is the same number of commands. For the channel names, notice that the order of the queue manager names is reversed with respect to the previous slide. Next page, please. Slide 35. Miscellaneous. This example shows how to enable triggering of the sender channels. From queue manager 1, QM Angelito, to start the sender channel when the first message depth of 1 arrives to the transmission queue for queue manager 2. Notice the attributes. Trigger means that trigger is on. This is a strange parameter because it doesn't have a value. It is a toggle. It's a switch. If you see it, if you enter it, it means that the trigger is activated. If you delete it, if you don't see it in the output, it means that the trigger is not activated. Okay? The other parameters are trig type first, which means the first message that arrives to the queue, and the trig depth, which is 1. Therefore, means the arrival of the first message is the trigger. In this presentation, I will not talk any more about triggering. Okay? Now, let's go to the bottom part of this slide, which is only for MQ version 7. It's how to specify a sender channel to connect to multi-instance queue managers. I will not cover multi-instance queue managers in this presentation. I just want to mention this particular detail. If queue manager 2 was a multi-instance queue manager, then the sender channel from the queue manager 1 will need to exploit the expanded format for the attribute con name. This expanded format was introduced in version 7, and using this format, the queue manager 1 could reconnect to the new active instance after a failover of the multi-instance queue manager. Notice that the format is to have a list of host name, port number, comma, host name, port number. Okay? Next page, please. Slide 36. To test the configuration, you can send messages from one queue manager to another. From queue manager 1, you can use the sample MQS put. It helps to indicate in the text of the message the name of the originating queue manager. At least I found that was useful for my test. In this case, I go to queue manager 1, I put a message, and I said, test from Angelito, queue manager 1. And then I go to the queue manager 2, put a message, and said, test from queue manager 2. Okay. Now, in the next slide, please, slide 37. From each queue manager, you can use a sample that we talk, MQS DCG, to browse the received messages. The first time, from queue manager 1, we say, hey, we see that it's test from the queue manager 2. And then from the other queue manager, we see that it's the message from the other one. Okay? Next page, please. Page 38. In slide 9, we briefly talk about possible delays while using client connection when there are network problems. In NQ version 7.0.1, and when the attribute for the client-server connection channel called share-NCV or share-conversations is greater than 0, the default is 10, if there is a network problem, then the NQ client will exploit the new function called automatic client reconnection. If the value is 1 or greater for this attribute, then these channels are full duplex and the communication can go in either direction at any time. In contrast, in all cases in MQ version 6, or in the case of MQ version 7 when share CNV is 0, then the channel is half duplex and the communication can only go in one direction at a time. Next page, please. Slide 39. Let's talk more about MQ version 7 when share CNV is 1 or greater. Point 1, if the MQ client abnormally ends, then the queue manager is able to detect this condition and, point 2, ends the listening agent for that connection. The number 1 is represented with the lightning rod, lightning, and number 2 is with a big X. We say, okay, it's terminated. We know the condition. This includes also the situation when a firewall abruptly ends a connection. For example, the MQ client is behaving well, but there is very little activity such as one message every 3 hours. Usually the firewall will end a connection that does not show any activity within a certain period of time, usually 2 hours. By default, the firewall will not tell the queue manager that the connection is being abnormally terminated by the firewall. If the option keep alive is enabled, then the queue manager is told when the firewall terminates a connection. But anyway, when using a full duplex channel, the version 7 queue manager sends periodic heartbeats, explained later on, and if the heartbeat fails, then the queue manager concludes that the connection does not exist anymore, and it ends the listening agent, freeing up the socket and system resources. Next page, please. Slide 40. Now, let's take a look at the behavior when the client-server connection is half duplex. This happens when using MQ version 6 or when using MQ version 7 and share CNV is equal to 0. Point 1, if the MQ client abnormally ends, then the queue manager is not able to detect this condition, and thus, it does not end the listening agent for that connection. This channel becomes an orphaned channel. In version 6, the client-server connections are half-duplex. Thus, when the client sends a message to the server, then the server waits for the next action from the client. If time passes and the server does not get more activity from the client, then the server cannot just assume that the client terminated abnormally. It might be that the client has low activity, such as one message every 3 hours, for example. But because the channel is half-duplex, the server cannot ask the client if it is still around. Also, in case that the client is indeed abnormally terminated by the firewall, then it is the same situation. The server does not know if the client is still active and cannot ask the client for his status. In short, in version 6, the server does not know and cannot know if it's dealing with a client that has low activity or a client that has been abnormally terminated. In version 7, when using full duplex, the server can ask the client for the status at any moment. If the client replies back to the server, then the client is okay. Maybe it's a slow application. But if the client does not reply to the server in a timely fashion, then the server concludes that the client was abnormally terminated, and it finishes the connection, thus avoiding orphan channels. Next slide, please. Slide 41. Let's continue with the case of using half-duplex channels, and let's assume that the application tries to send another message but detects that the previous connection is not available anymore. Most likely, that this is represented with the purple arrow at the bottom with a question mark. That was the original connection. It was terminated improperly, but the server doesn't know the status, really. Most likely, the application, from the point of view of Juliet on the right side, the application detects, oh, I'm not communicating with the queue manager anymore. Let me try again. It may issue another MQ connect and establishes a new connection. Notice that the old connection is not resumed. The queue manager receives a new request for connection, establishes a new listening agent. The queue manager does not try to reuse the other connection because he doesn't know if the connection is still active or it has become an orphan one. Thus, the creation of a new listening agent increases the counter for active channel. If the connection is broken again, and then the application tries to connect again, causes a new connection to be established. And if this is repeated many, many times, well, with every new connection, the counter of active channel is increased, and if this continues frequently, it might be possible to get the following error message, MQ9513, maximum number of channels reached. This happens because the counter of active channel has reached the limit specified by max channels. The default is 100, and this value can be altered in the qm.ini file of the queue manager. The worst-case scenario is that you notice only a single application connected to the queue manager, and when a new application tries to connect, the error messages of max channels reached is issued. This could be very confusing because you would expect that error if you were seeing 90-plus other applications connected, but the answer to the situation is that probably an application trying to connect 90-plus times and either the connection or the application was terminated abnormally and left orphaned channels, and each one has increased the counter of active channels. Next page, please. Slide 42. Now, let's take a closer look at how the MQ version 7 queue manager helps to avoid the firewall to kill full duplex channels. This is done by means of a heartbeat, or like a pulse of a heart, boom, 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 boom. Heartbeats are short flows of information that are sent at a regular interval. It's like a, are you there? Yes, I am. Are you there? And if there is no reply back, it means, oh, something happened. The only purpose of our heartbeat is to confirm that the session is still active and thus avoiding the firewall to kill the connection. Heartbeats can be performed from both the client end and the queue manager end at a negotiated rate that is based on the heartbeat interval, HBITN, parameter of both channels. The default value is 300 seconds or 5 minutes. This leads to early detection of network failures and other channel problems. The client program and the queue manager can now carry out recovery and reconnecting functions in a more timely manner, resulting in an overall improvement to the quality of services. Previous versions of MQ use a half-duplex control, where a heartbeat could only be performed from the queue manager end during an MQ get operation with a wait interval specified. And by the way, with the heartbeats are available for channels between queue managers and queue managers, like a sender-receiver channels. Let's go to the next slide, please. Slide 43. There is more explanation about heartbeats in the following red book, WebSphere MQ version 7, Features and Enhancements. Excellent red book, highly recommended. In MQ Explorer, the heartbeat interval parameter can be specified in the properties for a channel in the extended tab as shown in this slide. Next page, please. Page 44. You can find the value of the HB int or heartbeat interval by specifying the run MQSC command shown in this picture. Okay, next page, please. Page 45. There is a transmission queue that is specialized for working with clusters of queue managers. Each cluster queue manager has a cluster transmission queue called System Cluster Transmit Queue. It is abbreviated as SCTQ. A definition for this queue and others required for clustering is created by default on every queue manager except in ZOS, which needs a manual command. A queue manager that is part of a cluster can send messages on the cluster transmission queue to any other queue manager that is in the same cluster. These messages are related to the activity of the cluster, such as I'm adding a new cluster queue, I'm altering a cluster queue, or something like that. Next page, please. slide 46, and it has links for two pages in the information center that address very common problems with SCTQs and how to resolve them. Next page, please. Page 47.
The plot thickens.
Well, kid, in the story, Romeo and Juliet got secretly married by Friar Lawrence. Later, Romeo kills Tybalt, cousin of Juliet, and Romeo is exiled to a city called Mantua, because if he remains in Verona, he will be killed. From Mantua, Romeo is to receive messages from Juliet, and he moves his application from the host, Verona 1, to interact via Binding Smooth with the Key Manager 3 in the host, Mantua. However, to minimize the impact from Juliet's side from host Verona 2, Juliet will send messages to Romeo to his old host, Verona 1, and those messages will be forwarded to Mantua. As discussed earlier, to allow the exchange of messages between Mantua and Verona 1, the appropriate sender and receiver channels need to be defined in both hosts and the appropriate transmission queues. The picture shows with an X that the application Romeo get is moving from Verona 1, from the middle queue manager in the picture, to Mantua, to the queue manager on the left. Thus, the question is, what the MQ administrator in Verona 1 needs to do to forward the messages that are sent from Juliet to Romeo. Next page, please. Page 48. There are two tasks for the MQ administrator to do in the Queue Manager 1 in Verona 1, the one in the middle in the picture. Number 1, delete the local queue for Romeo, QR. Number 2, redefine QR to be now a remote queue designation, which points to the corresponding queue, QR, in the Queue Manager 3 in Mantua. Notice that we need to provide the name of the transmission queue to use, QMR3. This illustrates that the sending application, Juliet, in Queue Manager 2, on the left and the right, does not need to be concerned with the actual infrastructure of the MQ queue managers and queues. There is no need for Juliet to know the new details that Romeo is in Mantua. Juliet puts a message to the remote queue definition in Queue Manager 2. The message is moved immediately to the transmission queue for Queue Manager 1. The message is transferred by the MCA in both ends. And the MCA in Queue Manager 1 in Verona 1 will place the message in the queue for Romeo QR. But remember, QR is no longer a local queue, and instead it is a remote queue designation, which means that the message is moved immediately to the transmission queue for Queue Manager 3, Mantua, and the MCA transferred the messages to Queue Manager 3 on the left. Once the message is received by the MCA in Queue Manager 3, the message is placed into its final destination, and Romeo can get the message from the local QR in Queue Manager 3. Ta-da! Next page, please. Slide 49. Now, it is time for fate to make its move. Let's assume that the MQ administrator for MQ Manager 3 Mantua did not specify a DLQ. No, no, no. Furthermore, let's assume, too, that a testing team that uses Queue Manager 3 asks the MQ administrator to temporarily disable the put for another queue called QR1. However, due to a typo, accidentally the queue for QR was put disabled. An hour later, the MQ administrator realized the mistake and said, put disabled to the wrong queue. I did it for QR instead of QR1. Oh, my mistake. And re-enabled the put in the queue for Romeo. Dun, dun, dun. But the damage was already done. Of course, during that period in which the queue was put disabled, Friar Lawrence sends a vital message to Romeo to tell him that the father of Juliet forced her to marry another dude. Juliet refused. She was secretly married to Romeo, but nobody else knew except the friar. And she drank a very strong drug to put her into a catatonic state, and people thought that she was dead. Then she was placed inside the family crypt. Uyuyuy, this is creepy, man.
The friar tells Romeo in the message to come back to Verona and wait for Juliet to wake up and for both of them to run away and to live happily ever after. But Romeo did not receive the message. In fact, because there was no DLQ, when the MCA and queue manager 3 tried to put the message in Romeo's queue, the MCA was told that the put was disabled. And because the messages by now until now are non-persistent, this vital message was discarded. Just gone. Poof. Deleted. Poof. Next page, please. Page 50. This slide shows the addition of a DLQ to queue manager 3. In this case, when the MCA in queue manager 3 fails to put the message into the destination queue, QR, because it's put disabled, the MCA says, hey, if there is an LDQ, I will move the message over there and then put the message into the DLQ. Next page, please. Slide 51. This figure highlights the best practice to always define a DLQ in each queue manager. Next slide, please. 52. A special header is added to the message to indicate the reason why the message was moved to the DLQ. Whenever a header is added to the message, you can think of the logical representation of a big envelope. The output in this slide is another example of the small envelope inside a bigger envelope. The bigger envelope, notice the NQDET format and DLH for the eye catcher. Next page, please. The dead letter Q is also known as the undelivered message Q. And to find out the reason code for a message being sent to the DLQ, see the presentation in the PDF file from the webcast, browsing message fields, properties, and contents in MQ in pages 30 through 37. The rest of this slide and the next slide have more details on the processing of messages by the DLQ. Next page, please. Slide 54. Next page, please. Slide 55. So far, the messages mentioned in this presentation have been non-persistent. One way to avoid a message being discarded if it cannot be delivered is by making it persistent. The application could label the message as persistent, or the originating queue may have the attribute defpsist, that the messages are labeled as persistent. If the remote queue definition QR in NQ Manager 2 in the middle is made persistent, as mentioned here in the first line in the slide, then the transmission queue, queue manager 3 and queue manager will retain the message if the MCA in the queue manager 3 could not deliver the message to QR in queue manager 3. Okay? Well, kid, that is all. Good night. Sweet dream.
Wait, Grandpa. You have not told me what happened to Romeo and Juliet.
No, kid. I do not think that you want to know their fate. You are going to have nightmares.
Please, Grandpa, please.
Okay, you are forcing me to do it. Here you go.
Next page, please. After the NQ administrator enabled the queue for Romeo, he's now able to get a message, but this is not the message from the friar. Rather, it is a message from one of his friends telling him that Juliet is dead. Remember, she faked her death. Romeo did not get the memo that Juliet was faking her death. Romeo returns to Verona and sees Juliet inside the crypt. Creepy. And he thinks that she is really dead. Desperately. He kills himself with poison. Then Juliet wakes up and sees Romeo dead, and then she kills herself. Oh, the cruel fate for these lovers. Please, NQ administrators, do not allow another tragedy similar to Romeo and Juliet to happen during your watch. Ensure that you always define a dead letter Q in your queue managers. Next page, please. Next slide. I hope that you enjoyed this entertaining presentation. I hope, too, that some of the material was useful to you. This slide has a summary of the topics that we covered. Next page, please. This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. Visit the page site to learn more about upcoming page webcasts like the one you attended today. and access previously recorded presentations. Developer Works offers in-depth technical information. Visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The SR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Notifications link on all product support pages lets you to sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. Next page, please. Now, I would like to pass the control back to Joseph.
Thank you, Angel, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for questions.
We do have one question from Mirtha Luna. Your line is open.
Okay, I got a couple of questions, actually. The first question is, supposing that there are actually messages that are actually stacked up on a transmit queue because the remote queue channel is in a stopped state or something, how do I want I want to actually route those transmit queue messages to a different queue manager? I want to know if there is a way to actually do that. And the second question is actually related to persistence on the transmit queue. I remember seeing actually a slide on that, but I couldn't quite catch it. So could you just explain further about what does it mean to actually set the default persistence on a transmit queue versus not persistent?
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes. For the first question, let's suppose that you have a transmission queue that goes from queue manager 1 to queue manager 2 and the channel is down. But now you want to transfer those messages to the queue manager 3, for example. Then in this case, what you can do is stop the channels, and then you can modify the channel to point to the queue manager 3 temporarily. Or you can create another set of channels that will go with queue manager 3. That way, once the new channel is established, the messages will be transmitted from the queue manager 1 to the queue manager 3. And now, for the second part about the persistence, let me...
No, on the first question.
Yeah.
Well, if I just change the existing remote queue, but will it actually route the existing messages that are already in the transmit queue? Because the transmit queue has the message headers.
Yes.
And the message header knows what originally they are actually destined to.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Well, in this case, yes. It's possible also to put messages that have only the name of the destination queue without the destination queue manager. In that way, what I mentioned before, yeah, could work. But if you have defined specifically the queue manager 2, for example, as a destination, then only when the queue manager 2 is available back and the channels is restarted, that's when the messages can go from the transmission queue to the other queue manager.
Oh, there is no other option?
No.
Okay.
But could you send me an email? Let me investigate that offline.
Okay.
And see if there is a way that we can address that.
Okay.
And about the persistence, all the examples that I mentioned before, almost to the end, they were using non-persistent. And a non-persistent message means that if there is a problem with the communication or where the queue managers terminate abruptly or the servers are power off improperly and so on, then those messages are not stored in disk space and they will be lost. Then upon the queue manager restart, non-persistent messages are not guaranteed to survive a restart of the queue manager. Now, as mentioned in one of the slides at the end, you could change that by the application saying, I want my message to be persistent. Or when a non-persistent message arrives to a queue that has this defined persistent equals yes, it means that when the message arrives, it will be stamped with saying, from now on, you will be persistent. And then once it's labeled persistent, then let me just give you through the scenario. From the queue manager 1, is going to be transmitted. It will be put into a transmission queue to queue manager 2, for example. And in queue manager 2, is trying now to put that message into the destination queue. It's a a persistent message, but for any reason it cannot put the message to the destination queue. Maybe the queue is but disabled, or the queue is full or something. Then, but it's a persistent message. It is not going to be put into the DL queue. Instead, the MCA of the second queue manager will say, hey, it's going to talk back to the first queue manager and say, listen, I couldn't deliver this persistent message. Then you are going to keep that persistent message, and then you deal with that. And it is kept in the queue manager, in the transmission queue of the queue manager, the first queue manager. And then the MQ administrator has to look and see the different error messages, why it was not placed in the original place. I mean, there will be some errors indicating that the queue was full or something like that in the log. In that way, the problem is addressed. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
And we have no further questions.
Thank you, Jackie. At this point in time, we will conclude the presentation.